Welcome to Bow on Bulls Podcast.
Dude, that never get old. That can never get old, man.
Yeah, I really said that loud when I sat it today too.
Like, yeah, you gotta channel your inner Big Dave, man.
That's right. Shout out my big man. Even though I am getting bigger every week.
Man, we're getting older, man, so we gotta stop getting bigger. That's both of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta stop doing push-ups. I am your host, C Dub. And the man you heard with the blue jean hat, guys with the leather strap in my video is D Jackson. What's up, D?
What's up, brother? It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. You got, you trying to grow a long beard or something? What you got going on over there?
Well, I actually cut it, man. But, you know, I cut it. I dyed it a few days ago because the grays was getting out of control.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Everyone's telling me to dye my hair. Well, everyone. My niece, my nephew, and my mom. Like, Chris,
you look
too old. Yeah, you look so young with your hair all black. Said dye. It's like a salt and pepper hair.
But the way your grays go in right now, that looks super like distinguished, kind of like.
Yeah.
Look like you got money, man. That's how that's how rich folks gray come in.
Oh, okay.
Like that.
Well, this can't be deceiving. Like these Bulls, how they looking? But you know, I want to introduce my man.
We got the expert with us, man.
Come on, man, the expert. He was so amped up to come on the show that he gave himself homework to do for the show. He was like, "Give me some assignments," so I can use my analytical brain to break down this nonsense we call the Chicago Bulls. It's our guy, the analyst, economics. Master of the NBA, Doug Donis.
Well, nerds need homework. That's just how we roll. That's how we roll.
Chris. Is that a T-shirt? Nerds need homework.
It could be now. That could be my own personal merch brand. Oh, yeah. I'll throw it out there. I don't think that's going to sell real well. But
I don't know, man. It's kind of trendy to be a nerd now.
Yeah, it's kind of trendy.
Yeah, it's kind of trendy, man. How you been, Doug?
Just living the dream. I mean, watching the Bulls win, four out of six games. You know, that's about what we got these days. And excited for the play-in. Gonna host a play-in party.
So, yeah, man. I'm actually
you guys invited.
I'm gonna be on the West Coast, man. Well, I'll be going. Depending on what day they play, I might be coming back in.
Yeah.
Earlier that day, if they have a 17th game, but then my wife has a huge event in San Diego. And I get to, go and carry her bags and all that good stuff.
You get to be in San Diego, so who could complain about that?
True, but even though the next 10 days here in Chicago, the weather looks amazing. Like, I think we got 70s and high 60s every day. So, but yeah, San Diego,
Never been. I want to go.
I've been in a couple parts of California. I actually never been to San Diego.
Okay.
We were in Monterey about a month ago, and that was amazing.
Okay. It does. So it's the a Tuesday, right? For the party?
It is Tuesday or Wednesday, as far as I could tell. I don't think they've announced. It said 16th to the 19th. So I assume there's one game each day. And the first two games will be one on the 16th, one on the 17th. And I've not seen if they've said whether the Eastern Conference is first or the Western Conference is first. So
I know we haven't officially started yet, but do y'all have a preference? Y'all want the Bulls to play?
There's no choice. It's just Atlanta. It's already locked up. Yeah,
it's locked up.
Yeah.
See, I always mix that up. The way they do that is not smart to me. You would think the two teams that are in the 7-8 spot should have an easier way. They shouldn't have to play each other. They should be able to play 9 and 10, and then once they to have an easier time to get those spots because they earn a 7 and 8 spot.
Well, if there was single elimination, I would agree with you.
Well, because those two got double elimination.
Yeah, because they're double elimination. That's their advantage. Like, they if the winner of that game is just in, and then the loser gets to play the team they would have played anyway.
Right, that's right.
It is a greater, much, much greater advantage to be 7-8 than 9-10, and it would be even a better advantage than the seeding route would be. So it is a weird system, though. Like, every other league would just be like, it's a wild card, and they do it exactly like you said. So the NBA, they like to experiment and do things a little differently.
So let me reframe the question. If and when we beat Atlanta, I think we can beat Atlanta. Who would y'all rather see, Miami or Philly?
God, I mean, it might not even be Miami or Philly, like, by the end of the year. Like, I don't know if you've looked at the standings lately, but I think I was hearing on ESPN that, like, before we played the Knicks, it was like the Knicks could fall all the way to, like, 7, and they could go as high as 2. Like, that's how close everyone in the...
And Orlando was in the mix, race. Too.
Yeah, Orlando's in the mix. Indy's in the mix. Yeah, I think, like, all those teams... Maybe I would want to play Indy.
Yeah, I agree.
This group.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I feel good about Atlanta, but we are talking about these Bulls. But I feel good about the Atlanta game.
Yeah, I mean, that'd give us an advantage. We should be at home most likely, and I'd say we win that game like 6.5, 7 out of 10 times. So, yeah, pretty good odds.
Yeah, yeah. So, fellas, so the Bulls are in the NIT tournament. I'm sorry. I mean, the play-in. At a 37-42 record, this is a successful season because they're in the play-in tournament and they're below 500. Isn't that just sad that they're below 500 and they won't hit 5? They won't even get to 500.
They won't. But didn't we project this?
Yes, but
we projected them to be a play-in team, right?
Yes, we did. We did. Just a lot of mediocrity, man. There's too much mediocrity going around. And so how do you guys feel about, well, for you to this point, how do you guys feel about the season from start to now? Is it considered a success? Like, what to you was considered a successful season for the Bulls?
You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first, D.
Well, because my mind state coming into this season was we need to figure out things. I think we've successfully done that. We figured out who Kobe White is.
Who is Kobe White?
Kobe White's a good player that he can be a part of a winning situation. And he can definitely be a major piece in a winning situation. I don't know if he's the main building block, but he can be a major piece in a winning situation, and I don't think we should move on for him. Or we can probably get a lot more than we anticipated. You know, he has value right now. So to me, that's a success. You know, just we figured out that our future is probably not going to be with Zach. Based on this season, I'm pretty sure that they're probably going to move on. Well, pretty sure. You never know. So we figured some things out. So I would say we successfully done that. You know, the play on the court's been mediocre.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I won't throw in a name. Also, that was something that we found out this year was that Ayo is going to be a good player for years in the NBA. Kind of knew that, but definitely we're seeing him progress. And it's funny how injuries kind of do this, like around the NBA. You don't want injuries to happen, but when they happen, they allow other players to step up. And for LaVoy, get playing time, get experience, get better. Doug, was this a successful season?
I got to say, you guys just gave me the glasses 1/8 full each there. Like, I can't even say the glass is half full. Like, that was the glasses 1/8 full.
The glasses there was dust on it.
There was a couple drops of water. And
yeah.
You're dying of dehydration. Maybe that'll taste really good. Like, that might go along like one of the biggest stretches I've ever heard to try and like get to success. You could be like Arturis Karnišovas' hype man, I think, with that speech. This is going to come at the end of the season. Like, we figured
It's all relative, Doug. It's all relative to the Bulls.
Based on my expectations from the beginning, though, too.
Yeah. I don't think anything happened this year that was unexpected, except Zach LaVine. I don't even want to say fell off a cliff, because he kind of fell off a cliff, but basically he was just hurt, and he's out. Like, he played well below his previously established norms while he played, but that amount of time was so little that I don't want to pretend like if he had had a full season, like, I think he would have snapped out of it. I don't think Zach would just magically be this bad for a whole year. That might turn out not to be true, and it could be this injury thing now hampers him for the rest of his career. We'll see how all of that goes. But I think that was the one thing that's like most disappointing, because last deadline, you're talking like, how many first round picks can we get for Zach LaVine? And now you're looking at like, do you think we could get Ben Simmons for Zach LaVine? And if the answer is no, there's probably not another trade in the NBA for Zach LaVine. Like, so like that's really bad. And yeah, like Coby White has been an upside surprise for sure. But like, how many players on your team do you need better than Coby White to win a title? And I think the answer is at least three. And so, all right, like a fourth best guy, like that's nice, but like not something you build around. And the same is probably true of Ayo Dosunmu. Like, I think probably at least three players on your team got to be better than him. So maybe those are your four and fifth best players. But that's not something you start with. Those are things you try to find after you have at least two of the first three guys. And so that puts the Bulls in a really just tough bind. And maybe to your point, D, like none of this is unexpected. I didn't go into the season thinking they're going to win like tons of games. Yeah, I said in the offseason, like they had nearly perfect health last year outside of Lonzo. That's probably going to be worse, and we've certainly seen that. The results on the floor, actually, relative to the health of the team, though, have been pretty positive, I think. Like you said, four of your top eight guys are going to be out for like half the season, and you're going to win still like 39 games. Like, I'd say, okay, you know, that's not bad, given that I think we're like maybe a 45-win team with everyone fully healthy to be that good with so many injuries. But yeah, like none of that like makes me real thrilled. Like you can't get there and be super excited about that. And it's tough because maybe I just can't see them doing anything differently, but I think we're going to run it back again next year. Like, I think that's going to be what's going to happen.
Okay. So,
you know,
I agree. I don't think, like, but first of all, I want to step back. Your new metric was awesome. So baseball has wins above replacement. Doug just invented the players to championship metric. PTC.
I like it.
See, you want a homework, Doug. You want a homework.
Wait a minute.
I just gave you a new metric. You could go out to the world, write blogs about players to championship.
How many players do you need better than this guy to win a championship? That's your ranking.
Like, no, that's great.
If you need like three guys better than this guy to win a championship, that puts you in a really specific tier.
That's great. That's why I was carefully when I worded it. I said he can definitely be part of a winning situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And much better, to your point. Like, you feel way better about Coby White now than you did in the offseason. And you felt okay about him in the offseason. Like, in the offseason, you thought he was maybe like a 6-8 guy. This is a legit rotation player, but now you feel like, yeah, Coby White could be your starter. Just he needs to be a starter next to some stars.
What do you do with – I'm sorry, Doug.
No, go ahead, man.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, Doug said, like, we – and he's right. We're probably going to run it back, especially
since – Yes, we are.
Lonzo's going to be here. What do you do with Coby? It's hard to put him back on the bench. It's hard
to – Lonzo's not going to start. He's not played for, like, 2.5 years. Like, might be able to beat Lonzo in a pickup game right now. Like, I mean, I just don't think you can count on Lonzo doing anything. Like, he's not even playing 5-on-5 yet. They said, his dad said, and LeVar, not the most conservative of people when projecting things, LeVar said, like, he should be ready to play 5-on-5 in, like, it's like either July or August. I just don't think you can, like, look, I hope Lonzo makes it back. But even if he makes it back with like 2.5 years of rust, like, I don't think you look at Lonzo like he's going to start. He's going to have a minutes limit almost for sure, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, so I think that's if that happens, that's a great problem. If Lonzo Ball like magically plays like he did 3 years ago, that's a great problem. Then trade someone, figure something out. But like, I just think that's like at the fringe end of possibilities right now.
Yeah,
I agree, man. And I want to just agree with you too as well. I think on this podcast, I've been saying it since, you know, we're doing the podcast this year, is that Zach ain't going nowhere. No one wants him. And unless somehow some team is magically wants to give us picks and start fresh with Zach as some kind of guy on their team, I don't know what team that would that be, particularly on the West Coast, but yeah, I think they're going to run it back. And mm-hmm. kind of, and again, I'm gonna touch on Zach a little bit, not to beat him down too much, but like when you kind of want to be traded, you're kind of saying you admit it to yourself, you're not good enough to improve your team, which is kind of sad to say. Sad to hear a player just kind of like admit, yeah, I'm not really that good enough to be a difference in winning and losing that much, because we're not winning because obviously you're not playing well enough for us, you know, or being great enough for the Bulls to get wins. So real quick again, like, so the part of your homework assignment while we're kind of talking about it was to sort of, you know, go to your crystal ball and kind of figure out what can the Bulls do in the offseason. You know, I am going to jump ahead. Yes, I am, Chris. Not to jump ahead. Yes, to jump ahead. What can we look for in the offseason, given the landscape of the NBA, the Eastern Conference, Western Conference? We got the DeRozan's contract. You have some young players probably could sign. Stan.
Do we have any first-round picks?
No.
We do.
Okay. Oh, we do?
We got our first. We have our first-round pick this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. What pick is that?
I think right now it's 11.
It's 11. Interesting.
Okay. I think it'll just stay 11. I don't think it has much chance of mobility. Certainly not much chance of getting better. Maybe if Atlanta passes us, then I think we get to 10.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's as far. It's not a great draft. Like, I don't know. That's what everyone says. I'm not following super closely, but everyone says this is not a great draft. So,
hey, maybe we'll draft Bronny and get LeBron.
Don't get me started.
Well, if anyone can find the next Daily Terry, is this group for office right here?
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I think we could find the next Daily Terry.
That was bleak, Doug. Dang, that was just like, Doug, hit the floor. It sucks, man. We got nothing going on. No one was Zach LaVine. Do you think DeRozan's coming back, though? They have to come back, right? I mean, it's waste. If he's not with the Bulls, you just wasted, like, a ton of crap.
Well, you wasted a ton of crap anyway. I'm gonna give you what I think they will do.
Okay.
They're going to sign DeMar DeRozan for probably a similar deal to what he was on last time, like around $30 million a year. They're going to sign Patrick Williams, and they're going to sign no one else except to vet minimum contracts. And they're going to find a way to squeeze under the luxury tax that might involve dumping someone like Javon Carter for an expiring if they can, or like a cap space, or like waiving and stretching someone, maybe even Lonzo Ball. They might have to waive and stretch. But that's it. That's what I think they're going to do.
Can they not give Ayo a new contract?
No, they just signed him last year.
So I'm like, are you right? Wow, he's him and Kobe, man. That value.
Yeah. Here's what they should do. And I'm going to tell you this, and you're going to hate me.
No,
like, just want to punch me in the face.
The Bulls are below 500. Really, what's the point? Go ahead.
What they should do is they should trade Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu.
For
future draft picks. They should try to live in continuity land with Vooch, Zach, and DeRozan. Because no one wants any of those guys. You can't trade any of them for anything. So, like, whatever. You get your, like, mid-30s, upper-30s win total and make the ninth seed again next year with those three guys. And it sucks again. But they don't want to be bad, right? They just don't want to be bad. And so you hope those guys can keep you afloat. And then when all those guys kind of expire and you get out of all of their money and you can really rebuild, you'll have all the assets you got for Ayo and Kobe, which probably can both return like at least decent first, maybe even like multiple mid firsts, you know, and then 2 years from now, you start over with like a ton of cap room and like some excess draft picks. Like that's the only thing you could do to try to be kind of good now and then still have some kind of future later. But what they're going to do, and I get why they'll do it, because Kobe and Ayo are like the only thing you watch for, right? And maybe mm-hmm. occasional Caruso play. Like, hell, Javonte Green is like maybe the third most exciting player on the team right now.
Oh, yeah.
Or like Andre Drummond, like these vet min guys. Like, it's scary. It's like how bad it is. So, like, I would hate it. But, like, it's like, I don't know what else you do. Like, you have to try to figure out how to get excess value somewhere. And so if you want value, you have to trade things that are valuable, like for future considerations. And or you're just going to keep running it back with the same group. And then 2 years from now, when Io and Kobe are both good players and they're like 25 years old and they're unrestricted free agents and you can't match their salaries anymore, and someone's going to be like, well, I can overpay this guy and get him, and there is no one who's good who's unrestricted on the market, like those guys are going to be max players.
Yeah.
Like that like scares the hell out of you to say that, but like they're probably going to be like max players just because of their youth, still potential upside, versatility in like many situations. And so then if you keep them now in 2 years, you're going to be committing like $80 million of your salary cap to Kobe and Io. And like, I love both those guys now, but once they're making like $35 million each, like I'm not going to be in love with either of those guys on their next contract. And so recognizing that early is like a really important thing to do. Now, if we had like really good players right now, and then you had these two great value deals, they could be pieces that are really meaningful to a title contender, right? Like, you're trying to fit in guys on like cheap contracts who deliver like excess value and not pay like a gazillion dollars in luxury tax. Those two guys are like really valuable to a team trying to pull that off. But we aren't that team right now. And then by the time we're going to maybe be good again, if everything works out right, you're going to have to pay those guys mad bank, and then you're not going to be able to do it. So like, but that's why we painted ourselves into such a, this weird corner. And I, like I said, I want to punch myself in the face for saying that, because it's like the only things enjoyable about this team. But I think it's also, if you ever want to be better than like a 39-win team, like this is the type of thing you'd have to do. And it's got like a 2 to 3 year payoff before it hits. So it also sucks. Like it just sucks.
So best case scenario this summer is a miracle happening. Zoe looks good.
Yeah, that's probably the best case. Or a miracle happens and you draft the next like Donovan Mitchell or Tyrese Halliburton, you know, like a guy that like comes in or in that 10 to 12 range.
Yeah.
And just delivers way more than expected value. Like you're hoping for miracles from somewhere. And I would say, like, not that I think we're going to get that guy in the draft, because it's just super rare and unlikely at any point. But this is the type of draft where everyone is kind of clumped together. There's not obvious stars. There's not a lot of difference between players. This is the type of draft where like the star usually comes out at like 10 to 15 because it's just like just a total crapshoot. And so in that sense, maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe you'll be like the 1 in 5 team that like picks the right guy in that range. But like you're now in like the fringe chances of just getting lucky. Like you can always turn things around. Nikola Jokic was like pick 40 something. Like, yeah, sometimes you can get super lucky, but it's really rare if you're counting on it. And we are definitely counting on it.
But you know what reminds me of? What year was that? Why am I drawing a blank right now? The guy, he was a mid-first round draft pick. He played for Indiana the same time. He and Mike Dunleavy Jr. came out the same year.
Paul George?
No, not Paul. It was before his time. He was a shooter. Oh, I'm drawing a blank right now. Who's that?
Hope?
No, he was Indiana and he got hurt, but he was like their guy for like
Granger.
Danny Granger.
Danny Granger, yes. He with Houston, yeah.
Yeah. That's like he was like pick like 16 or 17, right? Something like that. And like the one year it's just like he and Mike Dunleavy Jr. was like averaging like 19 points, and then he became a star for like 3 years.
Yeah, and stuff this like guy that. Get lucky. Kawhi Leonard was 15, Giannis was 15.
Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy Butler was 30. I mean, like, so it's kind of funny. If you look at, I love looking at draft history. It's like, if you look at all the superstars, like something like 50% of them were like the number one overall pick. And then the other 50% are just like a complete scatterplot, like all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, if you have like the number one pick, and then if it's the number one pick, it has to be a year where it's like, you know, right? Like, it's not like the number one pick, if you don't know before the draft, like it's like LeBron or it's Wemby or it's Tim Duncan or whatever, or Iverson, or then Derrick Rose, like then those guys, like, you know, and they almost always hit. But if it's not one of those guys and it's like Andrea Bargnani or Anthony Bennett, or like, what if it's like one of these guys where it's like, yeah, it could be any one of the guys, and it's almost always a bust. Cause there's like almost like, it's so hard to pick, and then the expectations are so high, and then they try to force it, like almost always a bust. So it's like this year, number one pick, probably going to be a bust. Like right. There's not like a guy you're like, oh yeah, this is the dude. And so it's probably going to be a bust. And yeah, best player is probably going to be in the 10 to 15 range.
Well, let me ask this. Is there a superstar in every draft? That's a no.
No.
But what's the percentage, though?
It's probably usually one. I mean, I'd say probably like 80, 90% of the time, there's at least one star, and often
so
often
was it two. Star or superstar? Superstar, Tim Duncan, LeBron. So
probably one in four drafts is like what you would view as a superstar. Superstar. Mm. I mean, in 2003, had like three of them, and then also other stars. That doesn't even count Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh is just a star, and this like Wade, Carmelo, and LeBron were the superstars.
Yeah,
96, 84. Those are crazy drafts.
Yeah,
but.
Thanks for painting that bleak picture. I do want to fight back a little bit. Well, because what you described is what they should have done anyway. Like, hey, let's take our assets that and just get draft picks. They haven't done that. So, like, even though it sounds great, they're not doing it with DeRozan. They're not doing it with anybody. They haven't done it. They keep rolling them back, running them back. So, yes, you're thinking like a GM should think, duh, take your assets. Get young.
Yeah, talent. Because
they haven't done it. So
if our only option for Zach is Ben Simmons, damn it. Like, come on, man.
Can we not mention that man's name on this podcast?
I had a plan is about a year and a half ago, and it was basically trade all of the big three for assets. And at the time, it was like a pretty credible plan where you'd get between 10 and 15 draft picks, maybe six of them in the first round. Also, Caruso would have been in this mix. And just said, like, look, this big three is not going anywhere. You don't really want any of them. And, you know, you just rebuild around Kobe, Io, Pat, and just see what happens. You'll also be way better with your picks because your team will be lousy. And if you had gone back in time and did that, like, how much better would you feel about this team right now if you just basically had no high salary players? So you're just Pat, Io, Kobe, filler players. You know, each year you can have like 50, 60 million in cap space to like blow on someone. And then you got all your picks and then like six extra firsts. Like, you'd feel a million times better. And would you really care that you like only won 25 to 30 games the last 2 years? Like, was like being close to making it to the playoffs like so exciting? Like being in the play-in twice? Like, are these two play-in appearances worth like that difference between 25 and like 39 wins and 40 wins? Like, I just think no. And it was like so obvious this was the direction before. Like, you just had to move. And it was so clear these guys were going to lose value. And that's exactly what happened. And now you're stuck where, like, you're going to sign DeRozan for, like, 3 years. You're going to bend over just like you did for Vooch and give him whatever he wants. And, like, do you want DeRozan when he's 38? Like, what are the odds on that return being good? Like, I think DeRozan's fantastic. But you don't pay people for what they did in the past. Like, we just did that with Vooch. I just saw this movie. I don't need to see the sequel. And I love DeRozan a lot more than I like Vooch. But the sequel is going to be the same. You're going to have this guy in a contract that's going to be a bad contract, you know, like 1 year after he signs it. You're going to be like, "What? Why did we do this again? Didn't we not learn our lesson?"
You know, we were talking about, you know, getting acquiring draft picks and whatnot. I'm like, oh, that's like OKC. But then I'm looking at OKC's record. It was like them, but they would have.
Yeah.
They won 50 games, though.
I just told you.
Regardless, they won.
OKC, I said like 3 years ago, I said, these guys are going to be amazing. They're doing, they're taking their lumps, but everything they're doing, what you have to do now, at least in my opinion, and I could be wrong, you know, I say a lot of stupid things sometimes, but in my opinion, you can't tank anymore. I don't know if you could ever tank, but you definitely can't tank anymore because the lottery odds are so bad. What you have to do now is have a shotgun approach at the draft. You just need lots and lots of picks. And then you hope some of them pan out. And like, I don't know how many first rounders OKC has drafted. Like, I don't know, probably 10 in the last 3 years, something stupid. And they got like another 10 in the next 3 years. And so what you see with that is like, yeah, did all those dudes hit? No, but they were pretty good. And probably if you have so many picks, your level of intensity and like scouting is way better. You put more money into your scouting department because you know you have so many picks. But they hit on enough of them. And now they have stars. And like, it's not like they did not draft a single marquee player where you were like, oh, this is the dude before he was drafted. Like maybe Chet Holmgren, like maybe, but he was like, this dude had this lowest BMI of any guy to ever get drafted. He was like 7'1" and weighed like 195 pounds.
Lower than Durant?
Yeah. People said, oh, well, he's just like Durant. Durant was like 2 inches shorter and 20 pounds heavier, like in the draft. Not like this dude took like Twig to a whole new level. Like, I'm like, I don't even know. Like he probably has some kind of hyper metabolism to be like so skinny. Like he, like, and I still like, and he's been great. Mm-hmm. But like, I'd still be scared. This guy is going to be brittle. Like, do you trust him to stay healthy for like 5 years? Like maybe not.
Right.
But either way, like no marquee prospects and they didn't draft like a surefire superstar in any of this. And, but they had so many picks and enough of them panned out and enough of them became decent picks that, you know, they put together this amazing team. And if they need another piece, they can be like, hey, star in the market, we'll give you 7 first round draft picks for him. Like whatever player is available, like OKC can get him. Right. That's like why, no one else can be like, oh, you want 10 first round picks? Yeah, sure. We'll give you 10 first round picks for Kevin Durant. We'll bail you out, Phoenix. Like, I'm not saying they should do that, but they could. Like, they could do anything. Like, and, you know, that's what you need to do. You need a shotgun approach. And that's why I said, like, trade all 3 of these guys in Caruso, get like 6-7 extra draft picks. And then each year, if anyone gives you 2 for, like, I'll give you my number 19 for number 16 and a number 1 next year that's top 15 protected, just take it. Just keep taking those deals and loading up. So then every year you've got like 1 extra pick.
Doug, that's what's so frustrating, Doug, because like we've been begging for do this. Trade Caruso. Get that's your job. Collect assets. And because like if you're not going to win unless you get a superstar on your team, you either buy one, like you say, can do.
We can't do that either.
Or you draft one. We can't do either. And we're not on a trajectory.
To do either. We're on the trajectory to get lucky.
Yeah. And the like guy.
Pray for miracles. That is our path is pray for miracles. Hope you get a guy like the next Jokic in the second round, the next Kawhi at 15. Like that is our hope. And it's a very, very dim hope. It's not a plan. It's just get lucky. That's our plan. Get lucky. Like, and I hope that happens, but that's not a plan. Like, and we've certainly not juiced the odds in our favor. So it's going to be tough. Like, there is not a point where I would be, if I was to replace Arturis Karnišovas, there is not a point in the last like 20 years where I would feel like, man, the odds are more stacked against me than they are today. Like, we have fewer assets today than at any point since John Paxson took over the Bulls. That was probably the last point it was this bad, where like they basically, like, your only young players were Curry and Chandler, who both looked like they sucked, you know, and Jay Williams ended his career. And then you also had like a bunch of bad salary on the team and Jalen Rose, and your team was also terrible. Like, that was the worst time I can remember, but this is like the second worst time. It's just ugly. There's not a lot of options.
Yeah. I literally was a GM. I did nothing in this year. I just sat there all day and just, you know, got paid to make decisions apparently this year in the front office. This is so damn bleak. This is why sometimes I'm like, should I do Bulls podcast? Because like, it's
just, you want to hear a crazy stat?
Oh boy,
I'm gonna steal this from Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo.
Okay,
he was on the Bill Simmons podcast, and Ryan brought this up, and I didn't know it was true, but it blew my mind. The Bulls have not traded a player for another player since 2021.
Oh yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah.
That's like insane. That's like insane. We've not done a player for player trade. Like, we've done like fringe draft pick trades or whatever, and that's it. Like, we've not like made major draft pick trades either. But we've not done like a player for player trade since 2021. Like, we just kept rolling it forward. Like, with this team, with this roster, like this is the squad that you're like, you're a non-playoff team, and you're like, we want to see more of that. And I just feel like there's a pretty good chance that streak continues this offseason.
Oh my goodness, make it stop.
sorry. You can go back in time and kick me off and feel better about yourself.
No, that's fine. We're so freaking average. So D, there's a change that you want to happen. that doesn't involve a player, but involves a coach that you want to get into. That may
see, but that's a trick question though, because where do we go? I mean, I'll give it to y'all. Do we want Billy Donovan to take the Kentucky job to leave our next coach in AK's hand?
Well, what I want was a front office to do something. Yes, D. For me, it doesn't matter. He has it. I don't want to spend too much time critiquing his coach, but yeah, what's the difference? Is it really that big a deal if he's not coaching? And to your point, the most interesting question which you brought up is getting them a second chance at a coach. And do I trust them with that? Coaches do matter. So that's a big question. I think that whether or not should Billy stay is whether or not do we trust the front office to shoot the right coach and then because in the right path, because that means that coach has to be on board with the front office doing. And so far the front office hasn't proved itself to do anything really worthwhile in terms of winning besides getting lucky with I guess getting ball. But that's kind of like the hard question, right? It's like, do I trust the front office in general, right? That's what it boils down to. Do I trust front office to move forward?
No.
And the question is, not hard, but like it's tough because it sucks. That's what I mean. Like, you know, like
it sucks.
You know, it's not tough because it's difficult.
It's tough because it's awful.
We could say, oh, Billy should be traded. Like the bottom line is like it's the front office. That's what it boils down to. We complain about the symptoms, but yeah. The disease so far has been the front office. And so
we all agree. We wouldn't mind seeing Billy gone, you know, to Kentucky or whatever. But the alternative, we don't know what that's going to look like. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And it signifies it stamps another like 3 or 4 years for the front office to make decisions for the Bulls, you know, if they have, you know, for the most part.
There are two wrinkles.
This kind of sucks. You
related to this?
Oh, sure. Go right ahead. Wrinkle me up. I got an iron board to start.
Wrinkle number one, 0% chance we hire a better coach than Billy Donovan.
Wow.
Is that because of the market or was that there?
First, I'm going to say Billy Donovan, we'd have to agree on how good a coach he is for you to agree with this statement. I'm going to say I think he is roughly between the 12th and like 16th best coach in the league. Like he's in the middle. He's not the worst. He's definitely not the best. I think like actually the gap between say like whoever you think coach number 8 is and like coach number 20 is probably pretty small. And then there's like a group of people who clearly don't belong. Like Jim Boylan would be in the group that like doesn't belong. Like Billy Donovan's not in the I don't belong coaching a team group.
Oh.
You know, so he's in this like middle tier, whatever you want to say that. No good coach, like no coach that's out of the middle tier is going to be available, like generally. Two, no coach who's even maybe in the middle tier is going to go, you know what I want to do is coach this team that's been pretty bad the last 2 years, has no way to improve and no assets and doesn't want anything else.
So let me talk about that a little bit real quick though. So like, could it be that in order to entice a coach to come to the Bulls, the front office actually has to do something in acquire assets to, so they may force their hand into telling the new coach, we have a future plan, a new plan.
That was wrinkle number two.
Okay.
But yes, I agree with you. So wrinkle number one is I just don't think we're not going to upgrade. Wrinkle number two is that might not be so bad because even if we downgrade, even if we get the next Jim Boylan, let's just say we do that. I think there's a good chance that happens. You're going to pull one of his assistants and fair chance they're the next Jim Boylan or that type.
Yeah, I was
going to say. But if that happens and we win 25 games, it forces the ownership to blow this whole thing up and probably fire Karnišovas and Eversley, right? Like if you blew all your assets for this and then you became really bad, either you're firing those guys or at least those guys have to make wide sweeping changes and they can't just keep running it back. Like Billy Donovan, in some ways, because he's the best they could hope for, actually perpetuates the continuity. Like last year at the All-Star break, I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought this team was like cooked. Like they looked like they were you know, they were going to just like fold in the towel. And like Billy and the guys, they rallied. Like they did not give up on Donovan. Like he keeps the guys going at points where you think this thing is done. And if instead of finishing 14 and 9, if they finished 9 and 14 and they won 31 games, we probably aren't bringing back Vooch. We probably aren't running this whole thing back, right? You would have had to have made changes. Like Billy Donovan, for maybe, I don't want to say excellence, but him keeping things close enough actually kept this team together, which in the long run was bad. And this year at the start of the season, when we were 5-14, I thought they were going to fall apart. And somehow he rallied them again.
See, he's
and
part
kept
of
things going.
But he's part of 5-14 start. He's coaching that team
he
too.
Is. He is. But what I'm saying is like at points where like the team could just throw in the towel and everyone could be like, screw it. Like he kept like one of the main jobs I think a coach has is keep the team motivated and engaged. And he was able to do that. He stopped everyone from just quitting. And if they just quit again, we would probably, if we won 25 games this year, we'd have to shift everything up in the offseason. The fact that we're going to win 39 means we're going to probably run it back. So again, this year, if we had Jim Boylan as coach and everyone was like, screw this guy or Vinny Del Negro. And they're like, screw this guy. He's a bozo. He doesn't know what he's doing. And they just start like, I'm just playing for my own stat line. I'm not even going to try. We would be better off in the long run than we are by having Billy Donovan.
Was it? Yes. Well, so I don't want to. So you just say, of course, if you had a worse coach than Billy Donovan, we'd be better off. That's kind of interesting because I kind of brought the same point up before about Billy Donovan is like the anchor that's kind of keeping all this, I guess the keystone is keeping everything together.
Yeah.
Because he's tied with the front office. And I don't give it too much credit for like keeping the team together because this, people say that a lot. I didn't say you. People say, oh, they didn't quit. I'm like, I watched the NBA. A lot of teams don't quit. They just don't. A lot of teams just don't quit. They play hard, they're professionals. And Billy does coach them when they do, but they play bad, and he coaches them when they win, vice versa, whatever. But I think Billy at the end of the day is just, you know, like he's data. Give me a new metric, coaching above two.
He's a first round exit coach.
First round exit coach.
Good luck, right? Man.
Like, that's what he is. He's a first round exit coach. Like, you don't look at him as a tactician. I wouldn't trust Donovan in the playoffs.
Oh, I see him in the playoffs. No, I don't.
I think he is a good teacher. I think he's a good communicator. I think the players like him. I think they play hard for him. And I think all those things matter in the regular season to keep a group together through what is really like a long set of drudgery, especially for a team that basically has been unchanged for 3 years with slightly declining performance. Like that is a job where people tend to be like, screw it, I'm done. Like and we saw that with Zach, right? Like, I think that's how Zach wanted out. It's just like, you know what? I just can't do it anymore. I just need something different. Like I've been here so long. I've not experienced much success. I just want something different. I just don't want to do this anymore. And you know, whatever, Billy Donovan's fought that off. I mean, and how much credit you want to give him, to your point, Chris, I agree. Like, I'm not saying, like 10 other coaches might be able to do the same thing. Like, I'm not saying he's like one in a million for doing this, but he's first round exit coach. That's who he is. And you know, like I won't be sad if he leaves. I think, like I said, I think we'll get a worse coach. I think the team will fall apart, and I think that'll force us out of the inertia that we're in now. And that ultimately is a good thing. We need to get out of this inertia that we're in now.
So here's the thing. So if Billy Donovan is a smart guy, and I have no reason to think he's not, he has to somewhat question his job security right now. So Kentucky, you know, they got history, you know, so if that's out there, you know, the rumor now is he's the top candidate, you know, he's the number one choice for the university, you know, he has to consider it. So if the Bulls are not ready to make a full 180 right now, as far as like the front office, they're going to need an in-between guy that's with the program. They're going to toss it to Mo Cheeks or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
That's going to be the blueprint and everything. Until they're ready to make a 180 and everything, it's going to be Mo Cheeks probably, or somebody else on the bench.
Someone making $2
million. Yeah.
Whatever the cheapest coach they can find is what they're going to do. And to your point about BD going to Kentucky, like, Kentucky's got mad money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if they think Billy Donovan's the guy, they'll pay him like 40% more than the Bulls are paying him. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll get a huge raise. You know, like, I mean, like, would you leave your job for 40%? I'm out the door. Like, he paid me for, I love my job. I love my company. I love the people who I work with. I'm fully remote. Like, it's amazing, but I love everything about it. 40% more money. I love that a lot. So,
yeah,
you know, like, even like all the incentives, and Donovan's got to be tired of this too. He has to know there's no light at the end. I mean, even if they committed to like doing something awesome, if they could figure out a plan, I would still probably leave for 40% more money. And they can't. There is nothing awesome they can do.
Yeah, so like, that's a good point. Because like, what's the, how you at the table? All right, what's the plan for this year? It has to be the same plan for like 3 years straight, right? Well, wait for Ball to get back better, healthy again. They do this like just resend the email to him
and be Groundhog Day. Yeah.
Right. To your point, that's like at some point you're right. That is just like kind of ridiculous. And
I would go back to Kentucky. I'd be like, you know, look, we should all send Billy Donovan some emails. You know what? Just take a look at what happened to Saban when he left Miami. It was a great decision for him. Super successful in college. You know, Nick Saban goes to the NFL. Not so great. Goes to Alabama, wins a bunch of titles. That you could be the basketball Nick Saban if you go to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is, you'll make way more money. They'll build statues of you. Like, This is your path. Like, I think for Donovan, I would totally take the Kentucky job if it was offered. I wouldn't even think.
You ever seen the movie Focus, D?
Will Smith?
Yeah. So we got to, put some kind of a Kentucky paraphernalia around him all day long. And, you know, give him some Kentucky Fried Chicken, deliver it to his hotel.
But look, like, I know they got like off the record conversations and deals and stuff as far as like his extension. He has to question his job security. He has to be, right?
No.
What?
I don't think so.
I don't think he does.
No, not with this.
How
are these guys running back like the team every year and you think they're going to get rid of Donovan? There's just no way. I guess maybe to your point, D, a front office that feels like it doesn't have job security will pull the coach first as a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's always your security hatch when you're general manager. Like, I'm just going to replace the coach, which is always ridiculous because it's never the coach. Like, coaches just don't move the needle. Like, it's the players, and who's responsible for the players? The general manager.
Unless you're Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers is his fault.
He pulls the needle in the wrong way. Yeah.
You're from Chicago. Love you, Doc. But, son, come on, man.
I love Doc Rivers historically. Like, I was a huge fan when he coached Orlando, and I thought he was great, and I thought he did a nice job with the Celtics. But the game has changed dramatically since that period of time, and I think he just has aged out of, like, the modern NBA. Like, I think, you know, what he's doing just doesn't work. And, like, that's true of, like, a lot of people, right? Like, these guys who are coaching or thinking about the game, like, it's 2010, the game's just different now. And, you know, Doc Rivers has now shown, in my opinion, 3 straight stops, that he's underperforming, you know, with this elite talent and these people who think he's like really great. Like he probably was really great. Like, he probably was an elite coach in this other era of the game, but not now. Like, that's what I would say.
I'm glad you said that. And I'm sorry, Dub. I know you're about to talk. So the game has changed. A guy who's credited with ushering in this new style of play has been out of a job for almost a decade now. Would you consider Mark Jackson? He is responsible for this new play with the Splash Brothers and everything, giving them the freedom to play quick up and down and shoot, you know, 43s a game and things like that. Would you, any one of you two, would you consider Mark Jackson?
I could not hate Mark Jackson anymore as a coach.
Really?
So, you know, here's the Mark Jackson story that gets me. One, and I don't know how religious either of you guys are. I'm agnostic. Mm-hmm. Mark Jackson's super religious.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like one of these like really like fringe evangelical guys. Stephen Curry has a sprained ankle and he takes him to church and he faith heals him and makes him jump up and down on the sprained ankle to prove that the faith healing works in front of like the ministry. And I'm like, anyone who just, like, I just can't wrap my head around that. I'm like, this is a level of insanity that I just can't wrap my head around and bring into the team. And he was like, he brought like the faith so much into the locker room that for the people who weren't in the same page, like it became offensive and alienating and difficult to manage. And that's like a piece that like I don't care how religious you are. There's lots of people who are super religious. I don't care that you thank God when you hit a shot or that you do whatever. But as like the leader of the organization, you can't alienate the people who have a different belief system than you. And you can't be making a guy jump on a sprained ankle to prove that your faith healing works. Like these are like the types of things to me that just like pull me a little bit too far out of bounds with where things go. And so for me, like Mark Jackson, just not the guy, you know, and the fact that they also became like this crazy elite team the second he left, like maybe they were already on that path and Mark Jackson started to get him on that path to your point. And they were just going to get there no matter what, whether Jackson stayed the coach or not. But those couple things, like a few of those stories I've heard about him, just like, just push me into like the hard no category.
What about you, Dub?
Yeah, I heard a similar story. I didn't hear all the details of that story, Dub, but yeah, I heard like, yeah, the religious thing was kind of, in the locker room a little bit too much. As a coach, I mean, I guess to Dub's point, Dub, one thing about Doug, he didn't question his coaching, right? We questioned the sort of like in the locker room kind of thing. So I know I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big Mark Jackson fan. I think he's a fine coach, to your point. I think him ushering Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but it's a name for the Bulls that I didn't really think about, but I'm not a big Mark Jackson fan. I liked him with the, but yeah, when I heard some of the stories, I was like, yeah, kind of turned me off a little bit. And I don't
so,
know.
So you don't really credit him with ushering this new style, or you?
I do. I credit him
because some people say it was just the personnel.
Well, it's that too.
You got Steph and Clay. You ain't got no choice. Let him rock.
It's that too because Curry was like crazy good in college, right? So it's both. Like you know, you need good players, but the problem is that you don't. As a coach, you don't want to screw it up. So did you screw it up?
So at the very least, man, we would have a new identity. A new style of play, it wouldn't be, let's just run it back.
That depends on the players. And he's not the GM. You know, though, you brought up a point about you know, paying Kobe and paying IO. There may be a point in time where they had to make a decision. I don't know. I think too far ahead because I don't know what the hell's roster going to look like. you mentioned – you know, these guys are going to be comeback players because of the way the market is. You don't have, you know, you can pick and choose. You have to get rid of both of them, right?
You could do it one and one, right? You
one and one. Yeah.
And I think that might be the sensible approach to one and one. Like it would be really hard to give up both. But, you know, if you could get a better package for Kobe, I would do that and I'd keep IO.
All right.
So no Mark Jackson. Damn. Not this one.
Well, it's good. You got to think outside the box a little bit, right? Like,
right.
You know, I think about, God, I'm blanking on his name. The guy who went to Detroit, who was at Phoenix the year before. And
Monty Williams.
I wanted him Monty Williams. So bad, sorry. But yeah.
And you think about Monty Williams, and it's like, now people are already talking like they paid him like $11 million a year, and they're already talking about like buying him out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not working here.
Well, he said before the season started he wanted to sit out a year. Yeah. He reluctantly took this job. I think the 11 mil was too hard to turn down.
Yeah, it would be it for me too. I mean, like for coaching, I think it was like, I think he became the highest paid coach or second highest paid coach, whatever. Like, you know, but what I see with coaches is so much of it is always just about the personnel. Like, it's so hard to gauge one coach versus another coach without following the league like so incredibly deeply. And so, like, is Monty Williams a bad coach now because, like, the Pistons are just a dumpster fire? Like, I don't know that's true. But was Monty Williams, like, maybe the second best coach in the league? You want to pay him that much money and give him so many years? Like, probably not. And, you know, the Bulls are going to be in the same state as the Pistons, where if they want to get whoever the Monty Williams is, and I would put Monty Williams in, like, the Billy Donovan bucket of, like, yeah, he's good, he's fine. Like, I'd like him, respect him. And maybe ignoring what Billy did here, but like what I thought about Billy when we hired him. And the Bulls are going to have a Pistons-like situation Like if a coach is really being honest about what the future is going to look like, I think they're just going to have to pay someone who's like a middle of the road guy, insane bank to come here. So I think to your point, D, they're just going to go with like the Mo Cheeks, whatever, some hot assistant who's like, I'll take it because it's a coaching job and it's like $3 million a year and I'm making 500 grand as an assistant. And even if I never coach again, I'll get like 10 million guaranteed and that's life changing mm-hmm. money. So why not? You know, like you're going to find like those types of guys and, you know, maybe you get the next Tom Thibodeau, but you're probably going to get Vinny Del Negro.
Keep it up his names, man. I don't want to be hearing that.
So what's the percentage y'all think we see Billy on the bench next year?
85.
That we see him, that he's going to be a Bulls coach? 85% yeah. chance?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. See, I'm totally opposite. I'm thinking like a 30% chance.
So I don't know who his so we had a conversation about this. Like, what is the hell is his contract? And how many years does he have left?
Well, the Bulls will just let him out, right? They won't pay him.
So
if he goes to Kentucky, like he's going to yeah. be here if he doesn't go to Kentucky. Like there's no way we're firing him. So it's really just if he asks to go to Kentucky, I think they'll release him from his contract.
Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, he got yeah. the gold dangling in his face. Like I think he goes for that. I think it's a 70% chance he leaves, 30% chance we'll see him next year.
What else would cause him to, like, do you think, like, for instance, you know, what can our front office do to accelerate that, you know, his decision making? Do you think?
Well,
I'm asking, like, is it like I'll rather let him give him a call on the phone right now. But is it like we traded Jack LaVine and that's like, okay, I'm going now. We're rebuilding kind of thing? Or is it like everybody's come back, Billy? So don't leave. Zach's coming back. Zoe's coming back. What actions do you think front office could make that could like maybe sway this decision?
I think if they want him to go, you just have to be transparent. You just have to say to him, look, we've had the same thing for a while. We're not really getting better. We're probably going to end a rebuild. You know, like we're probably going to have to move on from you, you know, in another, you know, if not this year, like, you know, next year. Like, I think you just have that conversation. And you say, look, a better gig than Kentucky is not likely to come along in college. You know, if you want to go to college, you know, we're cool with it. You know, and if you want to stay here, we're cool with it. But like, know that it's probably not going to be a great scenario over the next few years. And you know, you have a chance to make more money in college. You know, we'd encourage you to take it. Like, I don't think you have to do anything like underhanded to, you know, whatever. We're going to dump the roster I guess I should say, you don't have to be indirect. Maybe not underhanded was a bad word. You don't have to change the roster to convince him. You just have to say, like, look, go. Like, the money's going to be there. He'll go.
I'm coming from the perspective that he has the power to be to sort of.
We don't have to let him out of his contract.
Yeah.
And maybe he has an out clause. Sometimes these guys have out clauses for like certain opportunities. He might have an out clause to like coach certain college programs or whatever. But I don't know that he's like so tied to Kentucky that he would have an out clause for Kentucky. Usually it's like, you've got an out clause to go coach your alma mater, like some specific school that you're connected to. Like, I don't know that Kentucky would be on that list. But I think if he wants to go, I don't think we'd stop him. So I think it's super sensible. I don't know if he's really Kentucky's number one. I've not followed it that closely. I know he was on the short list of like four guys. But if Kentucky really wants him, I would think that it just happens. Like, I think if he ends up the number one, it just happens. I think the problem for Kentucky is if by some miracle, the Bulls make it out of the play-in tournament, like they start losing a lot of the recruiting season is what I've read. If they have to wait for the playoffs to be over and they may want someone in place before then, like they can probably wait another week and it's not a big deal. But if they have to wait like 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, you know, the first round just drags on forever. They may not want to wait, and they probably can't realistically negotiate with him now. Maybe they could if they just call the Bulls and say, hey, look, you mind if we talk to Billy? Like, do you really care about what's going on? Maybe they would say, yeah, go ahead, hire him, and he'll just finish out the playoffs. Like, we're not getting past Boston, right? Like, there's 0% chance we agree. Like, even if we make it through the play-in tournament, like I'd give us like a 1% or 2% chance of beating literally anyone else in the East, right? Like, the 2 seed might be the Knicks. Like, I'd give us...
Yeah,
a non-0% chance of beating the Knicks or the Cavs or like kind of anyone, but there's a 0% chance for beating the Celtics, and right. Because we are the 9-10, that's all we can play. Like, mm-hmm. If we win ours and then we beat the next team, we're the 8 seed. We have no path to be the 7 seed. So we are playing Boston, who's already clinched the 1 seed, if by some miracle we make it to the playoffs. So, you know, I'd be okay if I was the Bulls even saying, look, go ahead, talk to them now. Like, we're not, this is not a team that can get out of the first round under any circumstances. So if he has a teeny bit of distraction, I don't really care.
Well said, Doug. Well said. Maybe I should do like a show identification right now. You are listening to Ball on Bulls with host C-Dub, my man, D. Jackson, and with the NBA analytical genius mind. Oh, yeah, Doug Thonis.
Take the job, Billy.
Take the job.
AD, so Doug has two more assignments to hand in for his homework. The two remaining, he talked about Zach's salary in the market, non-existent. We talked about the Bulls and DeMar's contract. And I didn't mention Drummond because I don't really want to talk about Drummond's contract. Who cares? But the two left remaining are the how much has Kobe's scoring fallen since the All-Star break? And then Doug also has how much has Ayo shooting in minutes in defense has improved from the beginning of the season to the start of the season? Which question should we pose to Doug? About Kobe's scoring decline or Ayo's ascension this year?
Oh, I'm definitely interested in the Kobe stat right away. Yeah.
Doug, I know you went out to dinner with your best friend, not me. Because the dinner must have been not good because you got back early.
I would go out with you anytime, Chris. We would definitely have not been back by now. This friend doesn't drink. We'd have had drinks. We'd have been swearing about the Bulls drunk. For sure, it would be great. Like Doug, kicked out of the bar.
Like, Doug, what are you doing? I'm doing this homework assignment for my best friend Chris, who I should be eating dinner right now. The damn stat, and I don't drive. See, this is why you should get your car, because you could drive home when you want to go home. If you don't have a car, head around for somebody to get done eating their chicken wings and drinking the last cup of beer for the last hour to get your ass home. So,
all right, Doug. So I would say it depends on how you want to measure things in terms of just total points. Since the All-Star break, he's scoring two less points a game, which doesn't really sound like that big a deal. But the problem is his three-point shot is now at 32%, field goal percentage 39.5%, and true shooting percentage is down to 51%. And those are all really bad. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so effectively, I think what we've seen with Kobe post All-Star break is very sadly pretty similar to what we saw of Kobe in, like, I don't know, rookie year, second year, you know, like just really bad percentages. Actually, maybe the worst percentages since his rookie year. And, you know, I think the cause of that is just one, he's now taking on a lot more volume and a lot more pressure with greater injuries to the roster and fewer people there. Like, that pressure is amped up even more. Teams are definitely scouting him now, right? Now that you're the starting guard instead of the reserve guard, you're showing up as either the first or second name on every, like, pre-scouting report is the guy teams look at. You're going to be facing tougher defenders. And so when Kobe was on his hot streak, I actually predicted he's going to have a really rough kind of, like, second half of the year, because, like, first, you prove that you're a much better player than people thought, but now defenses start respecting that and they react to it. Now you start seeing double teams. Now you start seeing better defenders. Now you start seeing, you know, maybe a guy in the paint waiting for you when you drive. Like, all of these other reactions the team has, because now they respect you, make your game a lot harder, and now you need to readapt to all of those changes. And those adaptations may be, you know, taking fewer shots, passing the ball earlier, you know, getting to your spots off screens, like whatever, like just different things you need to do to free yourself up. Or it might be that, like, okay, I need to take a small step back into a slightly lesser role than this, and I need to get other guys involved more, whatever. And so it's not altogether unsurprising, but the drop off has been really steep. Like, he went from a near star player in the first half of the year to like a fringe rotation player is really the level he's playing at since the All-Star break. So that's a pretty big drop off. And the aggregate stats, I mean, the post All-Star break is a much shorter stretch than the pre All-Star break. So, you know, to be clear, that good stretch is like twice as long as the bad stretch, maybe even a little bit longer than that. So the aggregate stats are still okay, but yeah, make no mistake, he's definitely not ending the year on a heater by any stretch of the imagination.
Interesting.
Indeed. How do you feel about this game so far into the latter portion of the season?
No, I agree with Doug, and I agree the main with his reasons why, you know, because I mean, I think that the big obvious one is like, yeah, he's getting scouted. You know, you don't go on a stretch for 25 games where, you know, you're killing like that and professional NBA players and coaches do nothing about it. You know, so yeah, he's in the rotation. He's playing 35 minutes a night. You know, he's out there, so he's going to get scouted for. You know, he's essentially been, you know, our top two players. You know, you can argue, you know, one of the best two players, you know, all year, especially since Zach went down. You know, so he's getting scouted. You know, he's not getting those open looks. He's not surprising teams on a nightly basis. They know he can play. They know he can put up 25, you know, and things like that. So they made the adjustments, you know, and, you know, shooting 39% from the field is atrocious. You know, that's terrible. And what do you say? He's 31 from three now, or
32 and a half since the All-Star break.
Yeah. Like those are like, that's like Westbrook shooting threes right there. That's like, seriously, you know, but
Javonte Green, 46%.
What's Bush's percentage for three? Is it higher or lower?
I don't have it in front of me, but it was like 29% last I looked. So I'd say probably right around 29%.
You know, it's funny. When I watch Kobe's game, I'm like, he makes scoring very hard. like imagine like kind of with Kyrie, not saying he plays like Kyrie Irving, but like when Kyrie Irving, you know, scores, it's like Kyrie Irving burnt like 1,000 calories a second making that move just to get 2 points.
Well, think about it, man. Like Kobe's, yeah, I mean, he's considered a big guard. Well, he's 6'4", 6'5", 6'4", you know, but he's not like lightning fast. He don't have like a crazy first step. He don't have Kyrie handles and stuff like that. So as far as like creating his own shot, he got to work for it.
But you saw, okay, so I'm glad you mentioned that because we both saw him play the Knicks. And who's the guy on the Knicks from Chicago who's shorter than him, slower than him?
Jalen Green can really shoot.
Okay, that's
my point. Strong. He's really strong, too.
And he has game. So there's a level to your to basketball.
Jalen Brunson, I'm sorry.
Green. There's a level, you know, the levels, right, to this, as the young kids used to say. And Brunson knows his shots. Kobe takes all these, I swear to God, he takes different shots all the time. We've watched great players, and I know he's not great, but he's aspiring to be great. We know this. They don't take crazy shots every time down the court. They know the shots they're going to get. They know the five type of shots they're going to take every game, and they commit to them. Kobe, if it's three or bust, and he's going to the rim, he's not drawing the contact he wants to have to get to the line, and he's taking like bad shots, and he's putting too much effort into his scoring, and I think he needs to sort of figure out a way to score with less effort, and that could be. It's, you know, this team, you know, point guard cures everything. Yeah, maybe he had a great point guard with him. You know, maybe he had better players around him. He'll look much better because, you know, to Doug's point, you have a wicked defender on him while the good defender is on another player instead of him. But seems to me like, man, it's just like if it ain't three's not falling, he doesn't really have any other game, especially if the team has bigs in the paint. If they got a small team, he's scoring to the bucket. But if they have guys in the paint that could block a shot and could test, there's no in-between game with him. So, hopefully that – I don't think he's going to stay this cold, though. Hopefully he's up. You know, I can't see him in this season, you know, playing this badly. Every player goes through ruts and highs and lows. And hopefully
we probably got a week of the season left. So he got to hurry up.
Yeah, well, but it's one game. Four games. What is it? But all it takes is one game, right? And he's just like, he's Kobe. You know, shoot 7 for 10. Oh my God! You know, he's back. And then, so hopefully that happens. I just hopefully that the playing tournament kind of produces a different level of play. It's supposed to, right?
Yeah,
with this team. And yeah, so I don't know, but I think we kind of walked the Bulls.
I don't even think it's fair to compare him with Jalen Brunson, though.
No, it's not. But I say it because, like, because when you say, and we all know this, right? You don't have to be the fastest, the tallest, be good at basketball. And anything you point out was strengths that Sylvester Dan doesn't really have. But he's, of course, excelling in the NBA. And it's like, yeah, to the point where, like, so my point is that even though he may be faster, a little bit taller, he's not better. And so being better isn't mean being faster and growing taller. It's, you know, looking your game a little bit differently.
Yeah, like I don't know how much Knicks ball you watch and everything, but mm-hmm. I'm not saying I watch them a lot either, but you don't really see him do like a lot of dumb stuff with the ball, you know. And he has the ball, you know, 90% of the time when he's out there. He doesn't make a lot of dumb plays. Like, so his IQ is like really, really like want to say like a true traditional point guard, because he's different. He's like a today's point guard, so he's not traditional, but he doesn't really do like dumb stuff with the ball. You know, he'd leave that to Julius Randle because he takes dumb shots.
Interesting observation, because that's how he played in Dallas. You know, when to your point, he's a better point guard. See, you even said he doesn't really play point guard, but he's better than Kobe. He was better than Kobe playing point guard in Dallas, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the reason why he's able to get those shots is because he can play point guard, because he's a threat, you know. Granted, he has players around him, but he's the threat with the ball to get the guys involved, and he's a threat of scoring. So when you get guys off balance, you know, the game opens for you. And so I hope Kobe hits that level one day where his shot is more consistent and he can shoot off the dribble a little bit better, because off the dribble is like a 3-point shot and that's it. You know, I love it when I see him like shoot mid-range sometimes and go off the glass. Instead of like trying to take the ball to the hole all the time. He had a float game at some point. He doesn't really do that anymore. So, I just make the game a little bit easier, I think. I don't know. Doug, what do you think?
I agree with your kind of what you said. If the game's really hard for Kobe to score, like if he doesn't have his 3-point shot, he doesn't really have a lot. Like he is not a very explosive athlete. He doesn't get above the rim. He doesn't have a great floater or like any of these moves people will use when they're not above the rim players that are really strong or successful. So he doesn't have much once he gets inside the 3-point arc, unless he gets a pretty wide open lane where there's just no one there. And so that leaves him shooting threes. And I think, I don't know the stats in front of me, the advanced shooting stats, but watching him, I feel like his catch and shoot threes are a lot better than his off the dribble threes, which is true for most players. But if you look at someone like Zach, and maybe that's even true for Zach, like I feel a lot more confident when Zach is going to take an off the dribble three than I do when Kobe is. Like when Zach's in the zone, like I feel like he'll nail those. Not this year, because he was just hot garbage this year. But really, like Kobe is playing, you know, since the All-Star break, much worse than Zach was, even though I just described Zach as hot garbage. His hot garbage was still much better than what Kobe's done recently. So I think for Kobe to play better, you know, it's like he either just needs to adapt his game and just continue to grow. And he's a young player and we've seen really good progress. And so I don't want to write that off, you know, or if that's not going to happen, if he is like just limitations in ball control or whatever else, then I think you need to get him in a position where he's shooting more catch and shoot threes, less off the dribble threes, and he just needs to handle the ball a little bit less and get moved into more of an off guard position than you know, fully on guard or on ball position. So that's kind of my off the cuff thoughts with him. But you know, I'm excited what we saw for that stretch. Gives you hope that, you know, he's a player that can continue to grow. But you know, we'll just see. It's just going to take some more time to see, like, does he have more in the tank? You know, like we described, the defense has reacted to him. You know, he's now seen that for, you know, 20 games or so. He's going to have a whole offseason to work and react, and like, what are the moves I need to build up to counter all these new defensive strategies? And, you know, if he can do that, you might see him come out next season, you know, as a greatly improved player again. You know, or you might find that, nope, that's just not in the bag. And we now need to just kind of tone down our expectation for his role. And he's going to be an off guard player that catches and shoots well and is an occasional point guard, but can't be, you know, really your primary ball handler. And I think probably a little bit of it is that he's just in a role that's over his head. Like, I don't think Kobe can be your primary ball handler. That doesn't mean he's a bad player, but it means probably not. Like, going into the season, none of us thought Kobe could be a number one option, but that's kind of, we're asking him to be like a 1B option to DeMar DeRozan now, and that's just probably a little bit too much for him.
Yeah, so he's never going to be a Jalen Brunson.
Probably not. I mean, you never know, but probably not. You know, he's not on that path. Jalen Brunson was better at this age than Kobe is, so probably not.
That's what kind of sucks a little bit, because you know when you see it, and like for these young players we have, you know, Patrick Williams, you know, they're good, but you don't see it.
Yeah, none of these guys look like, oh wow, I could name three things that happened and this guy's a star. Like, none of these guys are on that level where you're like, wow, there are all the flashes and makings of whatever. They're all guys that are like, yeah, if it pans out, they're going to be the fourth best option on a team. If it really, really, really pans out, they're going to be the third best option. And, you know, you need a couple guys that you feel like with Jalen Brunson, I wouldn't have, before he broke out of the Knicks, I wouldn't have said, oh, this guy's going to be a number one option on a team. But I would have said, like, yeah, I can, that last year in Dallas, you could say, wow, I see if this, and this pans out, how it could happen. Like, I don't think it's going to happen. And lo and behold, it went to the Knicks, and a lot of it did happen. And he's probably a low tier number one option, but he's still a number one option. Like, you know, even if he's like a 1B caliber number one option where you need another guy just as good as him. Is not like your LeBron tier where he's like, yeah, just throw four guys next to me and your team's going to kick ass. But, you know, we don't have anyone who's even close to the Brunson tier. You know, we got guys who are like, if they pan out, they're maybe in the Julius Randle tier. And that's, you know, like, even that might be a stretch, which is just,
right.
It's just not a great place to build from. So
you know, he might be available this summer.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Actually, Fred posted this one to me. Julius Randle for Zach LaVine. You saying yes?
Right now, I would. I'm not a big Julius Randle guy either, but I would.
I say no.
I would right now, actually.
I thought that's an interesting one. Randle's contract is 1 year shorter. And you got to figure, I think they have to throw in some filler. I think Randle makes less money, so you got to throw in enough salary filler to make it work. But I would do it just because I think the opposite gamble to that is you just say, like, I think Zach LaVine's going to come back and be Zach LaVine of 2 years ago. And then when teams see that for 3 to 4 months, and then his contract is also only 2.5 years left, that his value is higher. And so if you believe Zach can rebuild his trade value, then you would say no. But if you think Zach can't rebuild his trade value, then you take it. It's just less total money. Both players are meh. Like,
yeah, how lower can your trade value get now? You know what I'm saying? So
it's negative now. So it can't get really more negative. Years coming off will actually raise it, right? Like, if people view Zach as maybe, I like to look at it this way, and I've not actually seen many people view salary this way, but I like to look at it as, like, if you were to negotiate a contract with Zach LaVine now, how much would you pay him? Like, he'd still be more than a minimum player now, right? Like, if Zach LaVine made $10 million, you'd be super happy for him with him on your team, right? So what number is the fair number? And I think for Zach, it's probably like 25 million, maybe even 30 million. And so he's making like 45 to like 50 million over the next 3 years. So effectively, Zach is overpaid collectively over those 3 years. If you say his fair market value is, say, 30 million and 90 million, and he has 150 million left, collectively, he's got 60 million in debt. Well, if you just run 1 year off the deal, now he's got, you know, 40 million in debt. You know, so like his value goes up if he stays the same just by running a year off when you're in this negative value range. So that's kind of like a way I try to look at a guy in my head. And so if you look at someone like Randle, like, I don't think his debt is 60 million. Like, I think maybe Randle's a little overpaid, but his debt's probably like 10 million. You know, it's just a little overpaid and his deal's a year shorter.
I don't think with both players, I don't think both players are really going to get much better than what they are.
No, no, neither is going to get better. I mean, they're both at the age where they are who they are.
If Randle was a little younger, maybe, because I'd be like, to your point, the potential there, you pay for the potential. But now you're like, you can hit the ceiling.
No, they're at their ceiling. Both these guys. These are known.
Why do I still feel like Zach will have one good year? Man.
He could have a good year, but he's 30, right? Like, he had three great years. Like, actually, with Zach, it's not whether he's – the question with Zach is, are you going to get Zach of 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and 4 years ago, or are you going to get Zach of last year? If you get Zach of 2 years ago, like, his value is, like, by the All-Star break is back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Zach of 2 years ago was, like, you know, scoring 25 points a game at really high levels of efficiency. And even if you're a little bit of a defensive Steve, but you're a three-layer scorer, like, Zach can score at the rim, he can draw fouls, he can shoot threes, he has a mid-range game. Like, that's a player you could do a lot with. You might not want to pay him $45 million without the defense, but it's a player you could do a lot with. Maybe not a guy you get multiple first-round draft picks back for, but not a guy you're trading for Ben Simmons. If you get Zach of last year, though, that's a guy who's just not worth anything.
Mm. All right. I want to end on a good note. I'm not going to end right there.
We got to talk about Io?
Yes.
Let's go back to Io. So you went down the Kobe White bandwagon. You should have picked the Io bandwagon.
That was D who did that. D wanted him by his boy Kobe.
Because we got to end positive, man.
There we go.
See,
we
end
positive. We end
D, I should let you just do your thing, man.
Interesting thing about Io, he has scored more every month than he did the previous month, the whole season.
Wow.
Some of that is just more minutes played, which is a big part of it. But his true shooting percentage consistently high, you know, throughout everything. So, you know, Io was really fantastic. And the reason I said I liked Io more than Kobe, if we did the one in one trade, one keep one plan, is Io to me is a guy that just can fit on any team, no matter who you have, right? Like, especially with his 3-point shot coming around. And, you know, he's had a really nice 3-point percentage this year. His volume is starting to get up to like reasonable levels, but he can pass a little. He can dribble a little. He can now shoot a little. He can defend probably four positions on the floor. And like, that's a guy that no matter what the next phase of this team looks like, I would assume he was a guy that can fit into it. He can fit into it at multiple positions. He can fit into it on the bench. He can fit into it as a starter. And he still has upside to continue to get better. And then what we know about Io is like, he just work ethic is off the charts. And I think actually this team has really good work ethic in general. Like, I think Zach's got a great work ethic. I think Kobe's got a great work ethic. I think all these guys work hard. So, but Io's got a tremendous work ethic. He's likable, you know, Chicago kid, Illinois kid. Like, so there's one guy, like I'm like, I would be super sad to lose on this team. It's Io Desumu. And I don't think he's got like superstar. But like, would it blow your mind if Io was an All-Star one day?
Okay, so I'm glad you said that, because David Ion on the show, but I think he was a rookie. Maybe he's second, I don't know. We had asked, you know, what his son was. I said maybe a one-time All-Star.
Yeah.
Best one case time scenario. When he dropped 17 a game, maybe. It's 1 year, he averages 17 a game. I think you gotta get 17 a game at his
probably
All-Star game.
I think Io's ceiling is Drew Holiday. And he made the All-Star team one time.
And Drew Holiday is a great player.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, Drew Holiday is like was the third best player on a team that won the title.
But that's a good ceiling, though. That's a good ceiling to have.
That's a good ceiling. It's a good ceiling. Like Drew Holiday, like, you know, he might be a very key player on a team that wins the title again this year.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I think that's a great comparison, too. Like, if he's Drew Holiday, like, that's fantastic. And that it's like totally reasonable. Like, there's nothing about Drew Holiday's game that I look at Io Desumu and say, "Nah, he couldn't do that."
Right.
Yeah, that's a good comp. Yeah, the only thing he has to do better is a little bit his point. It'll be a little bit of point guard, but that's maybe the offense they run. But yeah, that's a good something. That's a good comp, D.
He's a pretty decent shooter. He's a great on ball defender. You know, but once he get a little more experience and you know, running the team and playmaking. I think he can be a Drew Holiday.
Oh, yeah. So because Holiday's one of the guys like, well, I could do 20 a game if I wanted to, but I don't really play like that. So Io, I don't think if he tried to score 20 a game, but I hope he gets to the point where he's like, okay, I could score 20, 25 points this game when I really want to.
I think maybe he could. Mm-hmm. Like, not so. Maybe not like entirely yet. But, you know, if you look at his splits over the past couple of months, like February, 15.8 a game. March, 16.9 a game. April, only 3 games, but 17.7 points a game. Like,
and you know what?
He's a stone's throw away from it, right? That's all I'm saying. Like, yeah, he's not there yet, but he's a stone's throw away. Like, he gets a little bit better, and you get some of these, like, chuckers off the team. Like, just don't let Vooch touch the ball again. And, you know, like, take away his, like, 17 shots a game. Like, why? Like, I don't know what we're doing there. Like, just, you know, if he's on a team where there's more shots available, like, I think he could pick up more slack. Like, not, like, tons more, but, like, if all of a sudden you remove, like, 10 shots a game, like, I think he'd pick up 3 of them and score 3 more points and could chip in, like, 18, 19 a game on still good efficiency while making smart plays. And maybe, D, one thing you said that I loved earlier about Jalen Brunson is, like, he doesn't make stupid plays. Like, I feel like Io very rarely makes stupid plays. Like, he just... Right. Like, he takes good shots. Like, almost all of his shots are good shots. Like, he doesn't make really dumb passes. He's not just dribbling the ball off his foot like he's Zach LaVine or anything. Like, he just makes, you know, he doesn't make tons of, like, eye-popping plays, but he doesn't make a lot of negative plays. And I just think that is, like, a really good trait that you brought up. And I think that's a great thing he's got going for him.
And to your point, Doug, if – He's scoring. He's scoring right now that well. Just playing within the game. It's not one on one. It's not plays drawn up for him. So to your point, if he just gets one more move or something, one more element to the game, where because he's doing all this with just knowing angles and getting corner threes because you could tell this all around game offensively and defensively is there. It's just like now once. What did Drew Holiday has is like a selfish, like I could get my bucket, I could get this bucket every now and then. Once he gets that, then he's there. Then he's there.
If you imagine there's a video game slider of like how conservative versus aggressive someone plays, and like if you slide it up to like aggressive, then they're going to score more, but you're going to start seeing more like higher turnover percentage, like whatever, right? You're just taking more risks. And so you're going to get more whatever. Like, Io is on the very conservative end of that slider, in my opinion. And so I think if you just ramped up the slider now, like, he probably has, you can probably move it, like, a couple notches, you know, towards the aggressive end and get better returns, you know, on the positive side than the risks. You know, you move it too much to the aggressive end, you're going to get, like, more of the negatives than the positives, right? Like, the turnovers will overweigh the additional points. Like the harder shot attempts you make will become too hard. But I think he actually right now, I think he plays more conservatively than he needs to. Like, I think he could go with his skills today. He could go 2 more notches towards the aggressive side and get some gains. So I think there's definitely room to grow. And, you know, especially if they rebuild the team and you start seeing a move away from the big three, which I don't think they're going to do, sadly. But if they did, I think you'd start seeing, like, as you both pointed out earlier, more shots, more opportunities, stars go down, guys get chances. Like, that was a big part of Io's ascendance this year. And if they do a rebuild, I think we would see really good things from him.
All right. That's a great spot.
Great ending.
To end the show.
Positivity. There we go.
That's right. Doug is our number one option.
Dude, but how pissed would y'all be if Io does start looking like Drew Holiday, and I know the whole you want to get rid of him early for picks and things like that, and we get rid of him for didn't the Sixers trade him for that Nerlens Noel pick?
Because
wasn't that the trade?
Yeah.
What the difference between Io Sumo and Kobe is that the value Doug sees in him was we all see is that he played both ends of the floor, and he's consistent. He comes, you know what I'm saying? You know, Kobe, inconsistent. You know, high bar, you can score a lot of points, but you lack defense and you're not consistent offensively. If Io doesn't score, you know, offensively, he's still affecting the game defensively. And he runs point guard. So, he has, as a package, he has more value, you know, to his ceiling than maybe a Kobe does right now. Because, you know, so like one straight pointing with Kobe right now, but... Yeah, so and he's tall. He can't teach height.
Kobe's value is if He becomes an elite three-point shooter. And you see maybe some hope of that based on the types of threes he's willing to take and the hot stretches he gets. But that's where he is a really high value player, is if he just becomes this crazy great three-point shooter. And if not, then he's going to be who he is. Like, he doesn't have, like, to your point, Chris, he doesn't have the other skills to, like, back it up. Like, if his three-point shot is off, Coby White is not adding a lot of value to the floor most of the time.
Dang, we're in a negative league.
God damn it. Damn it.
Oh, but you know what? If Kobe's on the right team, where he's the third best guy and get open three-point shots, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of places Coby would help someone. Absolutely. And even this team, he can help a lot in the right spots. And like I said, I don't want to assume he can't make the adjustments next year to the increased defenses. We saw tremendous growth this year. And just because it ended a little bit, you know, with him facing way more pressure than he's used to and currently capable of handling, he's still, what, like 22, 23? And he's still, his arrow is still pointing upwards. So, you know, any limitations you put there should be, you know, drawn down in pencil, not in pen, as I like to say.
Mm. All right. That's Doug Thonis. Doug, I said, I'm putting the H in your name. Is the H in your name at all? Is it Thonis?
The H is silent. I'm going to go with the nickname Silent H. Is my. I stole that from a guy at work. His name is Matt Rostinsky, but it's spelled H and then Rostinsky. And so he used the nickname Silent H because people would always hack his last name. So I'm like, I got to steal this as well. But no, I appreciate you didn't go with Thomas because, you know, like that.
I've never, ever in my world called you Thomas.
You haven't. But I get that one a lot.
Smack me for that. You know,
I get that one all the time. No one, I don't know anyone who doesn't go Thonis unless they just say my name all the time.
Like it's funner to say Thonis than honestly. I know it's Thonis. I like saying
Thonis. I'm your bonus guest. Yeah. Bonus works all together.
You know? All right. The guy who invented a new metric. I want to see that metric in the blog post. I want you to just like every podcast mention that metric.
I got it now. I love it.
What was BC? What was a big player?
I'm gonna come up with a great set of initials. I'm gonna see if I can like do something fancy, like spell it as like LeBron or something. Like they came up with like LeBron metric. Yeah, I gotta find like a player name that fits into it that makes sense. Like, ooh, if I can somehow make it like the IO or something.
Who is that player that third like best the Kobe player everywhere?
You know, so I'm gonna look through it.
Is it the Drew?
Is it the Nash?
The Holiday?
Yeah. We gotta find like the right player and the right acronym. But I'm gonna work on that. It's brilliant.
Let the people know where they can find you, man.
They can find me right here on Ball. Like I don't know. Like
you still do a podcast with I can get Fred on the show. I haven't heard Fred on a while.
I still do the Big Red Bus with Fred. We do that one whenever Fred remembers. And if someone makes me really mad on Twitter, about once a month this happens, and then I do my own podcast just to rant about whatever they said. So that's the Bulls.
You don't post it. You just do the podcast. Right? You don't post.
No, I do both. I rip them on Twitter, and then I'm like, you know what? Twitter is too short format for this. I got to scream at this guy for 45 minutes on my show.
Oh Lord!
And then I do that. So that's on the Bulls beat, and yeah, Doug_Thonis on Twitter.
D.
Yes, sir.
Where can the people find you?
Man, same place, man. D Jackson 82. D-E-E Jackson 82. Yeah, man. I actually started, I've been saying this for a while, but I started working on new music.
Nice.
Actually hear me on something coming out in the next couple months.
Nice.
It may not be my own album, but it's gonna you'll hear a verse from me in the next couple that's out on a significant, like on a very important album coming out soon.
Ooh.
And then I'm working on some new stuff for myself. But yeah, man, just blessed that I'm still, you know, had successful, what seemed to be successful surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy, man.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Making moves again.
Back at it.
That's right. Rubbing shoulders with the stars.
Nah.
Yes.
Not I.
Well, I don't rub shoulders with stars. Well, unless D's with me, then like he's the star. So I just, you know.
No, sir.
No. Yeah, you are.
Regular.
Compared to me, you're a star.
Regular old D, man. I like being regular, man. I really do. It's the best thing in the world, being regular and being content with it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's great, honestly. Yeah.
Being content however you get it.
Always, yeah, I would say contentfulness is better than being regular.
Mm-hmm. Always being happy with what you have. Like, it's yes. in the world, like, people only look at the small little pack of whatever is around them. But in the world, like, there's probably more people who have less than you than more people, the more than you. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, like, probably anyone listening to this show, no matter who you are, I guarantee you, there's a lot more people with less than you than more than you. You may not see those people, but that's how it is. Like, your life is probably not in danger on a daily basis. You probably have, like, clean water, food, like, you know, like things you just don't even think about. Like, that's, like, a real problem for a lot of people in the world. So it's like, always be happy with what you have. You're more blessed than you think you are. And it's just always good to keep that in mind, because it's really easy to go the other way if you just, you know, whatever. Look at, you know, and social media kills you with that, right? Like, people always just posting whatever. And so it's just, you have it so much better than you think you do. It's always just good to keep that in mind and remember that.
1,000%.
Though you may not drive a big Kia Telluron.
Telluron, what is that?
What kind of car you got?
Telluride.
Right. Telluride.
Telluride.
What did you call it, man?
Telluride. What's it called again?
Telluride.
Okay, I'm gonna start over again. Though you may not drive a great big Telluride, be thankful for what you got.
Hey, Bulls magic number down to 1. Breaking news.
Bulls don't have magic number.
Atlanta lost to Charlotte today. So
they lost to Charlotte?
Yeah, so now we're down to 1. We just got to beat either the Pistons or the Wizards or have Atlanta lose, which is guaranteed. So
we'll get snapped out.
We will host a play-in game.
Yeah, I feel good about the Bulls even in Atlanta, actually, with that game. But it's better to play it here. But
yeah, I agree with you, but it's going to be here.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Watching at the Tona's house.
That's right. Hopefully. Dude,
the game's probably going to be primetime, 7 o'clock. Dude, I am slated to land at like 5:15, something like that. If there's no complications, I have some jet lag because that's like a 4-hour flight. But if I'm okay, I'll meet you guys there because I want
to. I'll send an Uber to get you at the airport.
Right.
I can't pick you up because he doesn't have a car, so he has to sit.
That's true. I don't have a Telluride. I have nothing.
Dude, we've been driving to the airport lately. It's been cheaper to just park there than getting Ubers back and forth, especially when you go to O'Hare. Because we're in Bolingbrook, you know, because the Uber is like $50 each way.
Mm.
It's like $40 a day to park. Like, if it's a quick trip, you know, if it's like next day, might as well just park there.
Yeah, you've been traveling a lot lately.
Wife, man, that's what she do, man. She's gone, man. A lot.
By the way, she's the star. You grew up shoulders with all the time, by the way, D, if you didn't know I was referencing.
Oh, okay. I'll give you that. She's a star. Yeah. You know, we'll be in San Diego, man. She got this big keynote and this panel with Common.
Been with Common, haven't done as a drink to the man. Tell him I said what's up.
Right. Oh yeah, you know, man, he know you. C Dub said what's up, man. Like, I'm gonna call him Rashid too. I ain't gonna call him Common.
I told you the name of the drop, right? You ever want to get in with him?
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Drop, all right. So I think that's the end of the show. I'm C Dub. Find me at Boss Plus One on Twitter or X. I post there once a week. this is fun, fellas. We're definitely going to do another podcast, of course. After the Bulls win, they're playing game. Right?
Feel good about it. Bulls will win. I feel good about it.
Okay. All right. But D. Jackson. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, man.
Now, you know, I don't even want to get into ifs, the Miami, Philly, or whoever they may play, because, like, yes.
They're going to lose to me the way.
True.
Yeah.
Hey, either way, we can regroup, have a podcast about our new coaching search, because if we lose, if we don't make a play-in game, make the playoffs, and we're going to have to be on a coaching search, because Billy ain't going to take too long to accept that new job.
I hope you're right, because I want something different. So I'm down for it. Let's roll.
We'll talk about Mark Jackson and Mo Cheeks. two of Doug's favorite people.
Mark and Mo.
Mark and Mo. Both of them from Chicago.
Mark and Mo from Chicago.
Yeah.
Mark and Mo from Chicago.
Not Mark Jackson. He's from New York.
Yeah,
Doc Rivers from Chicago.
Rivers, yeah. Yeah. Well, Doc Rivers might be fired. So let's say Doc.
We can get Doc Rivers.
Doc and Mo.
Mo Cheeks. Keep instead of Doc Rivers.
You know what? Loki, our roster is built like it was from 15 years ago. Doc Rivers was an elite coach 15 years ago. He might just be the perfect man for the job.
Bulls haven't won a playoff game in 15 years.
Might be on to something. Might be on to something. Might be on to something.
All right, we out. We gone.
Peace.
Peace.
That's it.